Welcome to the Inner Side Radio Program with me, Scooter.
I miss you more than all the others. This song is for you, my brother.
All the people who died, died. 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 They're all my friends and they died. All the people who died, 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 died. They're all my friends and they died.
With the death of Venezuelan President Hugo Chavez, some of our younger listeners may have questions about death and the afterlife. So let's bring in our guest, Reverend Josh Clancy. Welcome, Reverend.
Thank you.
Reverend, let me just ask what a lot of kids out there are asking today. After a person dies, what happens to his oil?
Well, my church, Episcopalianism, believes that your oil ascends northward to join a much larger pool of oil at a refinery near Baton Rouge.
And there's a higher power up there?
Oh, extremely powerful. Mm-hmm. They decide where the oil goes and at what price and in whose car it will be cremated.
Uh-huh. You know, a lot of children are worried that Hugo Chavez's oil may simply lie in the ground.
Well, faith will ensure that does not happen.
Good.
And America is full of people of faith.
So that's your belief. What did Chavez himself believe would happen to his oil after he died?
Oh, we don't care.
We truly do not. But we would like to extend our condolences to the people of Venezuela and offer to take care of any of their oil during these very difficult times.
Americans are good people.
We are. And bless you all.
Welcome to the Real News Network. I'm Paul Jay in Baltimore. On Tuesday, President Hugo Chavez of Venezuela died, as most of our viewers know now. Now joining us to discuss the significance of his life and the meaning of his death is Greg Palast. Greg's an investigative journalist. He's worked for the BBC. He's written for The Nation magazine, Rolling Stone. He's the author of the new bestseller, Billionaires and Ballot Bandits. Thanks for joining us again, Greg.
Glad to be with you, Paul.
Well, first of all, let's talk about your connection with Chavez. You've made at least one or two films about Chavez. You got to know him personally. What were your impressions?
Well, I was assigned by BBC television to find out who this guy was and why the U.S. wanted to kill him. Their Pat Robertson made the statement on the air, Hugo Chavez thinks, we're trying to kill him and we ought to just go and do it. And for the simple reason that Reverend Robertson made, which is that Hugo Chavez is sitting on the world's largest pool of oil. It's bigger now. The Venezuelan reserves are actually bigger than those of Saudi Arabia. No one's close. And therefore, the U.S. oil companies, the British oil companies, French oil companies, want to know why Venezuelans are sitting on top of their oil and won't give it away to them.
But Chavez does sell oil to the United States. Venezuela is one of the main suppliers of oil to the United States. And while there was a lot of rhetoric against the United States from President Chavez, they never did stop selling oil to them.
No, Chavez never wanted to stop selling oil to the U.S. His nation would die if it didn't sell oil. The idea that Chavez would ever threaten to remove oil is ridiculous. But what the U.S. oil companies and the big oil companies around the world didn't like is that Chavez wouldn't give the stuff away. Chavez sells Venezuelan crude oil. As of last week, it was about $101 a barrel. That's $33 a barrel more than the Canadians sell their heavy oil for, the same type of oil that Chavez sells. Which is, by the way, as I mentioned on your program before, the reason we haven't, that the Koch brothers in the U.S. is pushing for this so-called XL Keystone pipeline. It's all about trying to get oil at a cheaper price than Chavez will sell it. And Chavez wouldn't sell it cheaply because he uses that money extraordinarily, unusually, as for the Venezuelan people. It's just unheard of that a big oil nation uses their money from oil to give to the people.
Right. They now, don't do in terms of what you've seen so far, American media's reaction to the death of President Chavez, actually, in one of the other interviews, I'm going to show this again. Here's the New York Times just hours after President Chavez's death, and the headline is Chavez dies, leaving a bitterly divided Venezuela. And my comment was, we can put that down now. My comment was, and tell me exactly which country isn't bitterly divided. The United States is this great harmonious paradise, and especially an oil country. Yeah, you're going to have a division over who gets to use the oil wealth.
Actually, I completely disagree. It's not a bitterly divided nation. Chavez was overwhelmingly reelected several times. I've been all over the United States covering elections here and all over Venezuela and all over many nations covering elections. Venezuela is actually one of the few, one of the least divided nations on the planet. The Chavez administration was unbelievably popular.
Yeah, but
the Carter Center. Yeah, the Carter Center is funded by this guy Cisneros, who is a Venezuelan opponent of Chavez. Even the Carter Center says that no one's ever accused Chavez of stealing an election. He's very, very, very popular there. He was popular. His party's popular for a simple reason. As one of his opponents told me, a broadcaster, she said, well, you know, Chavez gives bread and bricks to the people, you know, because they used to live in shanties. They now live in real houses. They were starving. Now they have food. They had no medicine. Now they have, you know, Chavez care beats Obamacare by a mile. So of course they vote for him. And she said that with disgust, like, you know, how dare he give the oil money to the poor people? But that's what he did. So it's not a divided nation. You could say it's divided 75-25. But that's...
We could argue about this because I think it may be more like the way the vote breaks down, which is maybe 55-60 was the supporting Chavez, and you could have 30-40% that were opposed, which here, I mean, the United States, who knows? I mean, a lot of people don't vote, and it's maybe 50-50. But I think you're right. I mean, clearly he won election after election, and he had majority support. But that doesn't mean there wasn't a lot of bitter opposition to him, and not only from just the rich. There were, you know, I've been in Caracas quite a few times, and you know, there was opposition even at levels in the working class, in the middle class. But I take your point. The majority of people clearly supported Chavez and what he was doing.
Yeah, I mean, obviously there are always those who felt that the revolution that he, as he called it, didn't go far enough. So there's always a big opposition from the left and. Young people were chafing. They want a new world. They hadn't had the deprivations of their parents. But, you know, he was a popular guy.
Talk a little bit about the American media reaction to his death. The level of venom is really something.
It's unbelievable. And what's amazing to me is it doesn't matter whether it's, the kind of Fox News stuff where you assume that the right wing will attack Chavez. And you'll assume Pat Robertson will attack Chavez. But you get this from the New York Times. You get this from PBS. And, well, we know why PBS. The number one funder of of PBS is Chevron Corporation. I mean, they're the petroleum broadcast system, and they carry the oil company line. And the oil companies have always been just screaming angry about Hugo Chavez. And why? It's because of his hydrocarbon law. In 2001, he passed a law through the legislature that said that Venezuelans will no longer take 16% of the value of their oil and selling it abroad, but 30%. That's because they cut the first contracts and set the first royalties when oil was $10 a barrel. Now it's $100 a barrel. So they said, you know, some of that profit has to go to the people. Heavy oil in Venezuela was sold to foreign companies like Exxon at a 1% royalty. The Venezuelans got a penny out of the dollar of their own oil. He said, well, that changes to 16%. Now, there's another leader who did that named Sarah Palin in Alaska, who also raised royalties on the same U.S. oil companies by about the same amount. But no one said that Palin was a dictator. But in the case of Chavez, they say he's a dictator so that they can try to overthrow him.
Yeah, you can't read it. You couldn't, over the last few years, read a newspaper story, hardly a story, where the word dictator didn't get into the first paragraph when describing Chavez, in spite of the fact he would win election after election.
Yes, in fact.
But let me ask you something else.
Let me give you this is, I think, an important example. You had a guy named Romero of the New York Times has an interview with Chavez, and he asks him, when are you going to give up power? Now, has he ever gone to Obama or to Bush and say, and you know, Bush wasn't even elected, unlike, you know, did he ever go to Bush, any New York Times reporter, and say, when are you going to give up power when you have, and when you have an elected president in the middle of a term? And they kept calling him a strong man, an authoritarian, dictator-like, whatever that means. It's like Italian-like or something. And, you know, this is all about, in other words, he didn't go along with what the oil companies wanted. And they would say things like bitterly divided nation, oh, destroyed the Venezuelan economy. The Venezuelan economy is increasing at about 5% this year, as it has been steadily for a few years. If I'll take that type of wreckage for the United States growing at 5% a year. And, you know, he's done a tremendous job for the Venezuelan people. Now, look, I have my problems with Chavez. Chavez called me his friend. I said, no, I'm not your friend, because I'm not the friend of any politician. I don't care who they are. I don't want to be charmed. I don't want, you know, they always disappoint me. They always break my heart. I'm here to report the story. And I told some stories that he and his crowd didn't like. But, you know, I'm not going to join the New York Times crowd and talk about him as a dictator, a guy who won't give up power. They keep talking about him holding power. He's elected. And I got to tell you that during the – there was a coup d'etat. Chavez was kidnapped. The New York Times reported that he had resigned from office. It was a lie. I was working for BBC Television and The Guardian. I stayed up all night to finally get a hold of Chavez's people who had heard from Chavez that he was kidnapped. He hadn't resigned. The New York Times, when I asked them, why did you run this story that he'd resigned? They said, well, because the State Department told us. And that's how the New York Times gets it.
I remember that moment. You were one of the only one or two journalists that actually tracked that story down. Everyone else either took it from the State Department or they took it from the Venezuelan media, who were actually in on organizing the coup.
That's right. The Venezuelan media were in on it. In fact, one thing I disagreed with Chavez is that he closed down one of the stations. But it was a few years after that coup attempt. But if any United States network, yours or Fox or anyone else, called for the violent overthrow of the Obama administration, said, kidnap the president, kill him, take over, I think he'd be shut down. It's no, violent overthrow of the government is punishable by death in our Constitution.
All right. Thanks very much for joining us, Greg.
You're very welcome.
And thank you for joining us on The Real News Network.
Now it's time for Interside Radio's weekly segment, Who Gives a F*** Anyway? Rand Paul. And let me see what else. Oh, yeah. Dennis Rodman. This has been Who Gives a F*** Anyway? Thank you for listening.
You are the worst excuse for a journalist I've ever seen.
Arrested Developments.
Hey, everybody. This first story is, this is a video piece. It's from WPRI.com. It's Pastor Steps Down. Give it a shot.
A Woonsocket priest has resigned following allegations of sexual misconduct involving a minor more than 30 years ago. Reverend Monsignor John Allard has stepped down as pastor of both St. Agatha and Precious Blood Parishes. Eyewitness News reporter Catherine Sotnick joins us now live with the Blackstone Valley Mobile Newsroom.
Yeah, very upsetting news here tonight. And the Diocese of Providence is calling this a credible allegation against this Monsignor. And news of this certainly hitting the Woonsocket community very hard here tonight. Reverend Monsignor John Allard, no longer a pastor at two well-known Catholic churches in Woonsocket, St. Agatha and Precious Blood. The Monsignor is accused of sexual misconduct of a minor that allegedly took place more than 30 years ago. Many parishioners Monday did not know of the allegations and were visibly upset.
Yeah. Anybody got anything other than Woonsocket?
I like the St. Agatha's of Precious Blood.
I know, Precious Blood.
What a big surprise that they're crazy.
Yeah, precious blood. I mean, I love the Catholic names. You know, our sisters of bleeding agony, mercy. You know, there's more. Here, the parishioners respond. Here we go.
Yep, this is our parish. You've got the, I don't know what it's all about. You have the wrong man.
Absolutely unbelievable. And the absolute last person I would ever expect to hear anything like that about.
In addition to being pastor, the Diocese of Providence's Monsignor John Allard was assigned to the Father Murat CYO Center in downtown Woonsocket.
He's a very compassionate pastor.
He's very loving and touchy-feely.
Yeah, there you go. He's very compassionate.
I have no idea what this is about, but I can tell you he's a very solid priest.
The diocese says Monsignor John Allard has resigned as pastor of the churches and says he's expressed, quote, his profound remorse.
I may have to look elsewhere than the actual Roman Catholic religion. Yay! That's how difficult.
Hey, that's
great.
Finally, and no one is like, oh, he's such a good man. Oh, how can they say these things? They can't be true. Finally, some of those like, oh, maybe I shouldn't be a Catholic anymore.
Yeah, I like that guy. Wendy was listening to that when I recorded it, and she thought it was the priest talking, which is even funnier.
You know, like that's what amazes me when some child has been abused and I hear those people going, no, I know him, he's a nice man. And they don't go, but wait a minute, I've never seen a story on the news where someone didn't say that. Maybe people that are really nice to talk to also might be child molesters. Maybe child molesters don't walk around the streets going, nah, nah, nah. Maybe that's how they get in positions where they can molest children.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah, you'll never get anywhere with that, hanging out in a right. bathrobe. I mean,
right. Yeah, I mean, those aren't dangerous predators. Yeah,
they don't put you in charge of the CYO like this guy.
Yeah, and that's just what amazes me is that they never learn from the past to just, hey, guess what? Catholic priests molest children, and most of them probably seem like really nice people.
He was always such a great guy. He always had this little puppet that he carried around. And... Well, there's more. Let's see.
Oh, that is. That's how well I thought I knew him and how close I felt to him.
So some very upset people here tonight in Woonsocket. We can tell you that the Monsignor has been a priest in the Catholic Church for close to 40 years. He also served in parishes in Cranston and in Barreville. Reporting live tonight from the Blackstone Valley Mobile Newsroom from Woonsocket, I'm Catherine Sotnick, Eyewitness News.
Okay, we opened the show with the Harlem Shake. Did we finish that?
No, we just played a little bit of it.
You want to finish it?
Okay.
Sometimes you'd see people all outside and they'd all be dancing, which was probably more fun. And then you'd see people in an old folks home and they'd all be dancing, which is funny because they're old. And then you'd see another one in an old folks home and you'd be like, okay, I've sort of seen that. Sometimes you'd see like all war men with guns and stuff. And you'd hear the music and you'd think, no way, no way they're going to do the mad dance. That would be mental. But then, right, they do it anyway. It shows even men who've been trained to kill and have been handed implements of death by the state still like to let their hair down. They could probably do it as a victory dance, like on the battlefield, over the bodies of people they've killed. And the music's quite loud, which would drown out the screaming.
And there were loads of people doing it in offices. And at first you're like, okay, huh, yeah, that's really funny, you know? But then after a while, you start thinking, hello, the economy's sinking. How exactly is this supposed to help? It's all well and good waving your arms around with a funny hat on, but at the end of the day, you've got a job to do. We all have. So pull your weight and get back to work, you selfish Harlem Shake bastard.
Weird.
That brings us into the next story. Actually, this is in the Middle East. This is from YNetNews.com. Four resident Egypt for Harlem Shake. Four pharmaceutical students invoke wrath of Egyptian authorities for lewd Harlem Shake version. Egyptian police said Saturday they have arrested four students who filmed themselves publicly dancing in their underwear as more people around the world emulate a viral dance craze called the Harlem Shake. The four pharmaceutical students shocked residents of a middle-class Cairo neighborhood when they removed most of their clothes and videotaped themselves performing the pelvis-thrusting dance, a police official said. The hostile audience tried to assault the students, who are accused of committing a scandalous act, the official added. Some Egyptians have posted videos of themselves on YouTube doing the Harlem Shake in front of the pyramids. One of them dressed in white underwear and a bow tie, dances while riding a camel. The dance craze was sparked by a group of Australian teenagers who uploaded the 31-second clip, The Harlem Shake, onto YouTube earlier this month. It has since been viewed almost 16 million times. So apparently, if you want to do the Harlem Shake, do not do it in Egypt.
Right. So people have been arrested.
They have been arrested. These four pharmaceutical students have been arrested for apparently it's scandalous to dance in your underwear in front of the pyramids or something. I don't know. It's bizarre.
Now, if their lawyer pointed out that they're actually doing the Bernie Lean more than they are the Harlem Shake, would that get them off? Would that?
That might be a good defense. You might want to write to them, send them, shoot an email out there to their lawyer.
I wonder how they feel about the Macarena.
They clearly weren't doing it.
Okay, we're talking with Keith Lowell Jensen. His comedy album is Elf Orgy, and it's available on iTunes and Amazon.com. Keith, where is Carp in Tirana, California?
Carpeteria? That's where they sell rugs.
Okay, well, this is stories there. This is from the Sacramento Bee.
I have no idea.
Okay, you're taking a joke. This is from the Sacramento Bee. A youth pastor has been arrested for raping teenage girls he met at a California Central Coast church. Santa Barbara County Sheriff's investigators say 28-year-old Louis Joseph Bristol was booked on Wednesday for multiple counts of rape, child molestation, and selling marijuana to minors. The Ventura County Star says bail for the Carpentera Community Church high school pastor is set at $2 million. Detectives say Bristol raped two underage girls in vacant rooms at the Holiday Inn Express, where he worked as an assistant manager. They also say Bristol gave and sold marijuana to the teens and to teenagers in the youth group. There may be more victims. I didn't know you could be I guess it's just a youth pastor. It's not really officially anything. So he also has to work in as an assistant manager in a hotel, which makes it convenient for his rapes because he's got a place to take people.
He's a classy guy.
Kind of thing where it feels like he just sort of engineered a situation where he could be the hideous person that he is, and that's even more disturbing.
Yeah, maybe he his pastor thing is his gig, and he just volunteers over at the Holiday Inn.
All right, next story. Unfortunately, more rape. Priest with local tie convicted of sex abuse in Canada. This is from the Columbus Dispatch. The Reverend Philip Jacobs served in Central Ohio from 1975 to 1993. A Roman Catholic priest who once worked in Central Ohio has been convicted in British Columbia, Canada, of sexually touching a person between the ages of 14 and 18. The Reverend Philip Jacobs was found guilty on Monday. He was acquitted on one count of sexual assault and two counts of sexually touching a person younger than 14. Trial testimony that Jacobs ran his hand up and down the pants-clad leg of a boy he was tutoring at St. Joseph the Worker School in Saanich. The victim testified that he lay on a couch in the priest's home with his leg over Jacob's lap and Jacob's hand touched his genitals, according to the newspaper. Jacobs maintains that he unintentionally brushed the boy's groin and said his attorney, Chris Considine. Jacob, 63, could be sentenced to 5 years in prison. A sentencing date has not been set. The verdict might be appealed, Considine said.
That's a pretty specific charge, you know. What was it,
Rubbing the leg, yeah.
Rubbing a person of somebody under 14 or 14.
He's like two counts of sexually touching a person younger than 14, yeah.
We just call that molesting down here in Texas. We just call that molesting.
You know, just for a quick bit of contrast, because I feel like what you guys are doing is you're collecting all these stories and then it bullies up and it makes Christians look really bad. Focus this lens on ourselves, because I did see an article earlier that said that some atheists were rude to people on the internet.
All the time.
Anyway, during the trial in December and January, Jacobs testified that he took at least three teen boys on overnight trips when he worked in Ohio, intending to introduce them to masturbation. When Jacobs was arrested on the Canadian charges in 2010, a spokesman for the Diocese of Columbus told the Dispatch that diocesan officials had received about 10 credible reports of abuse by Jacobs from Central Ohio, that all allegations have been passed on to the police. Well, that's nice. At least they finally passed it on to the police. Took 10 allegations, but what are you going to do?
Right. What else are you going to do with your flashlight on your little camping trip, you know?
Exactly.
When you only have 9, you know, could just be some kids. You know,
right.
How do you introduce someone to masturbation? I figured that out all by myself.
Joe's upset. Joe's still upset that nobody introduced him to it. He was a lonely kid.
Just be exactly.
I had to figure it out all by myself. I was right. So poor.
That is an Arrested Development for this week. And now,
From the Top, a short bit from the Final Edition Radio Hour on Venezuelan oil heaven. We heard Greg Palast on The Real News remembering Hugo Chavez. Then we played a short snippet from the Skeptiles podcast with myself, Joe Dixon, and Sean Ewald, joined by stand-up comedian and filmmaker Keith Lowell Jensen. Skeptiles is a weekly podcast. You can pick it up at iTunes, Stitcher, or any podcast feeder. Check out skeptiles.com. This has been the Inner Side Radio Program. Past shows can be found by Googling The Inner Side. Doug Stanhope, in town next week if you're in Houston, Houston Improv, Tuesday, March 12th. He's amazing. Check him out if you can. And here he is from a few albums ago, cleaned up for radio, Doug Stanhope. We'll let him play this out. My name is Scooter, and I'll see y'all next week.
This whole generation is so unbelievably sad. If you're just getting to like partying age, you're fucked. There's nothing going on in this country anymore. It's done. Last call. It's just a suck generation. It's the most boring generation in the history of people. It's all dumbed down and watered. When's the last time you heard stories about rock and roll bands chucking TVs out of hotel windows or any of that that used to be fun? Like, there was fun in the world. Some of this is going to make me sound like a grumpy old f**k, and I am, but I have just cause. There's nothing. As people get older, the older you get, the more bitchy you get. Because that's just natural. The more jaded you get. But I think we're going to be the first generation of old people. As soon as someone gets old, they complain about the new kids and all these kids today. Look, they're crazy. It's always that the new generation was too deviant. These kids are out of control. They're crazy. They're immoral. Look at what they're doing. In our day, if we wanted fun, we just went to a barn dance. And we didn't even finger till we were like 35 years old. But these kids today, it was always that the new generation was over the top. And we're going to be the first generation of elderly people complaining, but in the opposite fashion. Where we're going, look at these kids today. We used to do crank off of tea dancers. And it was, no one got hurt. We had a lot of fun. We got some good stories and herpes out of the deal. It was a fucking good time. The blisters bring me back. These pussies, they drink a Red Bull for some pep, and they'd prefer if you went on the patio for a cigarette. And the closest they come to a fist fight is on a message board somewhere. You looking at my girl? I'm gonna delete you from my MySpace, friend. You got some block user in your future. They're about to start testing for adrenaline in the workplace. That's how sad this country's getting. Now, shaking your urine in front of you. Is that yours, Donnie? It looks a little cloudy. Have you been having fun on the weekend? Are we not enough fun for you here at the Verizon Wireless family? You need to seek it elsewhere? I don't think you're a team player. That's why I love hearing people go, oh, that town, that's like 20 years behind the times, that place. Book me there. I had fun 20 years ago. But I can still smoke indoors? Oh, I got ecstasy still pure, uncut, and readily available? Oh, what cavemen they must be. The only drugs that are even popular anymore, all that dummy drugs, all the drugs that make you more boring, all the mood stabilizer, antidepressant, everyone's got some mental disorder.